get started. I appreciate you all being here. It seems like we were just together, so it's great. We like that. We'll excuse my co-chair, Representative Lowry Snow, who is, I understand, out of the country. We're all a little jealous, but wish him well. We'll go ahead and officially call this meeting to order. You should have the minutes of September 24th in front of you. Hopefully you have a chance to review those. Look for a dispositive motion.
I would move to approve the September 24th, 2019 meeting.
Thank you, Senator. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Val. Any discussion? None in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. Mayor Walker, I'm on the line.
Thank you, Mayor. I should have asked. Do we have anybody else on the line with us? Say that one more time, sir. David, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Okay. We do have an item for public comment as we get rolling. If there's anyone that would like to comment. All right. Seeing that, we'll go ahead and move forward. Item number four, we talked budgetary items, so we'll look at the fiscal year 2020 budget and then the conceptual 2021 budget. And I believe Alan, you're going to walk us through that.
As we discussed in our last meeting, we had some carryover revenue to cover our expenses through the end of the fiscal year, the end of June, $294,000. And as we recognized early on, that wasn't going to be enough to get the work going. So I think you charged me last time with working with the co-chairs and with Senator Stevenson to see if we could put together a budget that we could then work with the legislature on to see if we could get some funding that would get us through the rest of the year and allow us to do the work that we intend to do. So you have in front of you a draft or a proposed budget revision for fiscal year 2020. You can see on that chart, on the left is the approved budget for this year, which has a built-in deficiency. And then on the right there, the proposed revision, we would be seeking an additional $602,500 from the legislature to get us through this year. That would involve some money, and I'll just tell you quickly about some of the assumptions down below on the operating expenses. Under personnel, it would allow us to bring in someone to serve as the treasurer and administrative help. The state auditor, appropriately, is not comfortable with one individual approving and signing checks, and so if you've got a treasurer or somebody that's handling the money, can be a separate set of eyes. That's something that I think can provide us some protection, cover, comfort, and also help as we set up funds for the money that comes in, make sure that we're handling those accounts well, as well as providing, as I said, some administrative support. With travel, as I've talked with many of you, I think there's feeling that we could benefit significantly from some members of the board being able to go to other sites around the country and see what's happening there. Potential peer sites, ideas that we might have. So there's money in there for your travel and my driving reimbursement, but also potentially if we want to go and see some sites around the country. Lease, I think we're going to stick with office in here at the Capitol, so we can save some money there by not entering into a lease agreement for some space. Legal services, as we discussed last time, we've kind of eaten through the budget already, and it looks like we're going to need to get outside counsel for this organization. Chris described last time, there's some question as to whether the assistant, whether the Attorney General's office can represent this organization. So that, of course, increases the cost. Insurance, we talked about last time, so that's fairly accurate there, and we've signed those papers, and that's in process. Without a new office, don't need office furniture and equipment, so we've reduced that, reduced the supply line a little bit. Technical expenses, about the same. And then consulting services, and let's see, the notes didn't show up. Okay. As we started to talk about last time, we'd be looking to get some help with PR, public involvement process, communications. Looking to get some help with design and starting to do some initial design, and associated with that, getting some help on market analysis to understand what the market might absorb. And so we built in cost of consulting services there, which gets us to the total that we see. So that's the proposal.
Discussion.
I have, I think Alan's going to talk with Jonathan Ball tomorrow. We think there will be money available that we can put in to make sure this is covered. He said probably it would be better not to handle any special sessions. We can move some funds and then we'll just do a correction when we get to the budget in
I like that.
We'll probably do it when we do the budget changes. There's money there. Money in two or three different accounts that we could either draw together, or there's one there's actually enough money to take care of it. So,
okay.
But we think there's a way to handle this. I think it's very important that we don't, I expressed this to Alan a few minutes ago, it's very important we don't slow this process down. I think we're, the public perception of what we're doing is very good, and I don't think we want to do anything that would cause that to change. And so we're talking a matter of just a few months, and I think, I don't think we want to take a new director and put the brakes on right out the gate by not having enough money to do what we need to do. So
I think it's important to point out the reason we don't have the money is because we needed the director to put us on this path. That was the intention all along. And so it's great to hear we have support from our legislative leadership. And any other discussion, please?
Alan, talk about the legal services again. Proposed bump there.
Do you want to?
We've been using the HA's office.
What you can.
Sure. I think as a backdrop, as an independent public corporation, this body has authority to hire legal counsel. So that's the initial area there. The broader one is when we first got involved, my boss was party to a meeting here and said we'd encourage you to look for outside counsel as soon as this gets off the ground. If there is a specific request from this body, then my management can discuss that with the co-chairs or the executive director or any other interested parties. So, but I think the intent all along is once things really start to heat up, to hire outside counsel.
Okay. Any other thoughts, questions?
I had a question. This is Mayor Walker.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Would it be possible, as we're talking about this budget, maybe if this board would be willing to, ask the governors to put in his budget in addition to the operating budget for this group? I know that alternatives analysis transit study that's underway did not get the complete funding we were hoping to get. I can't remember how much the dollar amount is we were hoping to get in the state appropriation. I think it's a couple $100,000, but I'm not sure. Would it be possible to maybe have, if the board agreed or however you feel like we should approach the governor, maybe put that in his budget to make sure we get that fully funded so that doesn't stall going forward?
I like that.
Yeah, we can. We wouldn't ask the governor to put anything in his budget. I don't know if the legislature cares about it, but we'd certainly be happy to put it in there, so.
Well, look, I mean, I don't know what the best avenue is to make sure that gets done, because like, that's underway now, but it needs its full funding to be able to get complete. I hate to see that part slow down, because that's the initial transit analysis of, you know, really this site, this area.
Senator?
No one should ever use the word guarantee when putting a budget together, but this will not stall.
Okay, that's what we like to hear.
Yeah, so, this isn't gonna stall. This isn't gonna stall.
Yeah.
It's reasonable.
Yeah. And I think it's reasonable. Okay. Anything else? Yeah, please.
So we have consulting services, a big jump in that line item.
Yeah.
Nothing listed there. I see some broken out consulting services on the following year proposed budget. Are they the same?
No, I'm sorry. It was broken out, and there, as I said, there are, I don't have it right in front of me, and I apologize. It's roughly, as I recall, roughly $30,000 for PR work. There's about $150,000 for the design of the site, you know, starting to do some design work. A little less than that, probably about $120,000 for the market analysis. And then I think there was, I think some engineering to start that process, transportation analysis, to help us make sure that we get the transportation system in place as we're designing the site. And that was roughly $20,000 to $30,000. I apologize that that wasn't broken out here.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Yes.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I have a question.
Please.
That website of that group that did some design work with the commission, are we going to be able to use any of that design or kind of piggyback on that, or are we starting fresh every single time?
No, I think we absolutely don't want to waste the work that's been done. There has been a lot of analysis that's been done. I guess one of the questions is what the procurement process will lead to. I mean, will we be able to use some of those same groups and individuals? And
or will someone else step up?
It'll give us a little head start. But if we use somebody else, they'll have to come up to speed on some of those issues and the information.
Maybe if we use someone else, if we can take some of those concepts, and also Draper City had some beautiful concepts too. You hate to just throw all those ideas out the window.
Yeah.
Not that fresh eyes aren't good. We just don't want to keep hitting fresh eyes all the time and not really go in any direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Who owns that product?
It's the point of the Mountain Development Commission.
Okay.
And I think they would be more than willing to share the information that they've gathered.
I think that's important. I mean, I think it's important regardless of who we choose. Again, if we whatever we bought, and then, you know, the data and that information, we should be able to share that with whoever.
It's a good starting point, and some ideas that Drapers have, and some ideas with potentially some new people. But again, I think quite a few of us are probably back to that transit analysis almost would come before the design, because there may be some metro line, some line that we're working around.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else? Let's then we need to adopt this as a proposal. I believe. And any public comment as well before we take an action on this.
I just have one other thing. Engineering on that second year, are you including anything for wetlands delineation and starting that ball rolling? I just think that's something that we might want to get sooner than later.
Okay.
Because as we're trying to define the property and where we might need to set aside areas that we can't develop, it might be good to have that identified sooner than later.
Yeah, we need to have that conversation about what's covered by DSCM versus this authority and work through that.
Okay. All right, seeing no additional comment then, I would entertain a motion.
Motion to adopt the budget.
Thank you. So thank you, Mayor. We have a motion to adopt the proposed budget revision for 2020. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Jim, we have a second. Any additional discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Now let's talk about the next year, the conceptual budget for 2020.
We're bringing this before you. As you know, we have a responsibility as a board here to pass a budget for fiscal year 2021, and that will be formal in June. I think we do that. So we're trying to get a head start here so that we can get a proposed budget in the governor's budget and give it some initial thought now. So I've had meetings with Kristen Cox and GOMB about expectations for the authority, what might be available, and based on our conversations, based on some conversations with members of the board, we've put together what we're calling a conceptual 2021 budget. Which doesn't mean that we're adopting this as the formal budget, but it's giving me the authority to continue conversations with GOMB to try to get some money in the governor's budget proposal. So you can see it there. It's kind of outlined. Got some notes at the bottom, adding to the staff planning and development expertise, in addition to the accounting and administrative support that we would start potentially in the next few months. With look at getting some office space closer to the site. And that's probably not absolutely necessary, but if we do have staff, we're going to have a place to put them, and there aren't enough free offices here to do that. Getting the travel, same kind of issues. And then with the consulting services, I've outlined there the types of services that we would expect to need. Now, I'm going to admit, I don't know that we're going to need all of them fully on board at the beginning of that fiscal year. I think this is going to kind of move as we start checking boxes, as we get the design in place, and then we're going to start putting some of the other pieces together. We'll start with a broader design that won't require everybody, but when we get down into engineering work, we will need engineers to help with the site plan and those kinds of things. So, still a lot of unanswered questions. This will have to be refined and will be as we get closer to passing the formal budget, but for purpose of the session.
How much office space do you anticipate needing? Is that probably something that's going to increase?
Right, and I've identified here that probably something with about four offices and a conference room. But again, that'll depend a little on when we hire these.
There isn't any office space in the corrections building there across the street, is there? Available?
Probably between the admin and the post, I think we could find something on that.
How about that, Jim?
You can cool.
I only know that because of my extensive tours out in that area over the past few years.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I kind of floated that idea with them, with my cabin, and something would have to look at.
Sure.
There's a possibility that we could save some money there.
It's a little difficult to get in and out of there security-wise, so it's not really public-friendly, but I think you can work out something.
Put some outbuildings on the side of the building there. Just have bathroom privileges inside. We'll make it work.
That may not work. I just that's a large building, and there's some maybe some space.
And maybe even over at the DMV, DLV, maybe we could look at space there.
Okay.
Across the, just down the road. So.
I think it'd be great if we could minimize the cost of the office, but just please use some existing state offices.
Well, over the next few years, there'll be just tremendous changes in what Department of Corrections, what space they're going to use, and a lot of them, they're going to be moving. There is a building there that would maybe accommodate some of what we need for now. So, just an idea.
Great. Other thoughts, questions, Sam?
$1 million proposed for an architect. Design. I wonder, as a land use authority, what are we going to be architecturally designing?
As you see, it's planning, design, and architect, so it's broad range. Part of that is, actually that number was suggested by GOMB, but part of that is so that we have money available for a process to gather some of the best designs possible. So if we wanted to do an international competition of some kind, there might be a little money for that. If we wanted to do some kind of creative outreach process, there'd be some money for that. So this is including gathering ideas, working through those ideas, getting a conceptual design, and then starting to work on a site plan that would be bringing in transportation, the economic pieces, and getting down into some more detail. I will say that when I had my first conversation with GOMB, I said, well, the amount that you're talking about, probably not enough to do the job right. We need to have the resources necessary to do this right so that we get the community benefits that we hope for. And so, frankly, they were encouraging a little more to me.
Alan, have you shared with them some of the ideas that we learned on the joint venturing that Washington County is doing and some of the things that we learned in those other meetings? If not, I'd like to take just a minute to kind of... So, Lincoln, I'm as conservative as it gets with money. I have a hard time spending any money at all. But I think it's interesting that the state has this beautiful, really neat location, this great land, and can turn it into something. You do have some other people with some large pieces of land around there, too. I mean, Clyde Companies has 1,000 acres, and I mean, there's different people with some big acreage up there, too. But it's interesting because Washington County, so you've got the state, which is a government entity and a lot of politics and that type of stuff, kind of trying to become a developer. At what point does the state let it go and let somebody else develop it? Well, if you sell it really early as raw land, just not entitled, no roads, not developed, you're not going to get a lot per acre.
Right.
And this potentially should be the most expensive land ever. I shared with Alan the other day that there's some land right across the street right now that they're already asking $1 million an acre for, unimproved. No roads, nothing in it. $1 million an acre, and they still have to improve it. With that being said, Washington County had this nice big piece of land, and so they joint ventured with a developer. Said, okay, great, you guys are the ones that are good at planning and putting in the underground sewer and the roads and everything, but we want to share in half of the improvements over the years, as opposed to Washington County selling it as raw land and letting the developer come in and make all that gain later on. They just joint ventured. We're putting our land, you guys put in your development, and they went along together, and now they're taking stuff that would have started out at 30,000 acre, and they're getting 300,000 an acre for that down there. So it's just an idea, potentially, if the state wants to stay involved, to do some type of joint venture where they can really recoup over the next 5, 10, 15 years as this develops and sells out. So that would entail some planning and some like staying involved. But I think long term, how it would recoup and people in this in this board or people in the state being able to also kind of have a say as to how it goes along could be really neat. Could be a good idea.
Just
so,
on that point before you move on, I think we've suggested that we get some analysis early on to help understand that risk-reward curve for the state. How long should the state be involved to maximize revenue and minimize risk to the public? And that's part of the analysis. When do you joint venture with whom? What's the deal point as we put it together?
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I might, you know, all these numbers we have on here to come up with this $3,067,000 budget, we don't have to spend all that. That money's in a, and we're watching it. We'll watch it to spend, and we'll have a carryover from hopefully into next year that we would be able to at least have a base on this. What we just did on the last motion, basically, we had leftover money from the process that we started through last year, and we've had leftover money from another account that we'll use to finish this up. So, I think, I don't worry about the budget size of what we're doing here, other than make sure we have enough, at least at this stage of the game. But if we don't use it in year one, we'll certainly use it in year two or three.
Thank you, Senator. And again, this board will be making those decisions as we decide whether and when and what to spend. So.
These are numbers that we're almost, you have to, where this is the very beginning. We almost have to make this up as we go along to get started here. And we don't know what a long is yet, so we're making it up, and that's best estimates that our director can come up with.
Okay.
Anyone else? Please, yeah. One other point. In that note number four, I said that it could be that we issue RFPs subject to legislative appropriation, and that provides a mechanism whereby we could get quotes and then take those quotes to the legislature and a more accurate number.
Okay.
Just we have a county that will take care of that, and if we budget that money, we'll be in place for another year. The issue is, I mean, by the time we get to the legislature, if we have those numbers, that's a really good thing. But if we have to continually go back to the legislature for approval, it becomes a very cumbersome process, and I don't think in almost all instances we work on a much higher level of trust than that. And we probably should make sure we continue with that.
All right. Any other comments? Okay. Again, this is not the approval of our formal budget request for next year. This is simply a working document to allow Alan to move forward as we work through that process for next year and go through a legislative process. So, but we do need approval of that to give you that. The authority to move forward. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Andrew. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mayor. Any additional discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed?
Aye.
All right, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to item number six, then approve the authority's procurement process.
I'm sorry, I promised last time that not every meeting would be just administrative stuff. We're getting through it, and we'll be able to have some more fun conversations. But at the last meeting, you adopted a number of policies. One that was not adopted was procurement, because we wanted to have a conversation about that first. The statute does exempt this authority from the state procurement code, but as you all said last time, we want to make sure that we've got a robust process that is above reproach and ensures that we're protecting public dollars. Chris Piper at the last meeting kind of outlined some concepts for how we might proceed. We've taken those concepts with the comments that you made and kind of drafted them into proposed policy. Now, at some point, we may have a much more detailed procurement policy for this organization. Bringing in some more expertise on the code, et cetera, and figuring out what is the right fit. But for purposes of allowing us to move forward with still a process that's rigorous and above board, this provides a suggested outline. I'm happy to go through it in detail if that would be helpful or not. I don't know what you want to do.
I think it's fair to say everything I mentioned last time is sort of incorporated here, so if you have any questions.
Okay. I can make a couple of points if that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Number one, we've talked to the Division of Purchasing, and they're willing to provide procurement services. So we can work with them putting out proposals, solicitations. They're willing to help review those, help with some of the contracting. So that provides some expertise and oversight. We'll always stay within the budget. Much of this, especially number four in particular, is language from the resolution that you passed that delegated authority to the executive director for purchasing. So we've taken that language, made some slight changes to it just to make it internally consistent and fix a couple of things, but it does require board approval for purchases over $50,000, as well as a competitive process. It requires a competitive process for anything between $5,000 and $50,000, but without board approval at all. There are some exemptions that were built into that resolution and kind of provided a little clarity there. You may want to look at those and see if you're still comfortable with the exclusions or exemptions that you had suggested earlier. And I think it's important to mention number five. The Ethics Act applies to us, but we wanted to call that out and think that it's important that we reemphasize that we're going to comply with the Ethics Act, and in particular, not doing anything for personal benefit at the cost of public interest.
Jim?
Does it look like I had a question? So
I do have
a little bit of a question, and that's just the use of purchasing for a lot of the planning, design, transportation, energy, maybe PR, but most of these are not really in their wheelhouse, and that's something that isn't ours, and we would probably have better circulation and response and be better able to help you craft an RFP. Because typically, like for design, for purchasing, they have a pre-qualified list, and you just rotate around and pick an architect or get two proposals and go from there. That's not really in their wheelhouse to do RFPs and value-based selections and so forth. So I think because we're in statute as staff, I don't think that's a problem. I just was kind of wondering if that... Yeah, we can still certainly do that, I think, regardless of what's here.
And that's what I was just going to ask.
Because I think we are assumed as staff for that.
We don't, that's not what we want them for. So.
And we make all the decisions on what goes out, but they just provide process support, their website, et cetera.
I would highlight the only required engagement with purchasing under this policy is that we would distribute the provide public notice, provide civil solicitation through the purchasing portal. So,
right, and they use the same one we do, so that goes out. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Any other questions, concerns, thoughts? Okay. We'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
I move we adopt this.
Thank you, Val. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, motion carries as well. Item number 7, authorize the issuance of RFPs along those same lines.
Just quickly, to keep things going, wanted to get authorization to start the process of identifying and issuing solicitations for the consulting services that we may need fairly soon. I think it's important to mention a couple of things. Number one, I'm not going to proceed with pursuing any solicitation until we have legislative approval of money.
Yeah.
The money's got to be there first. And number two, that last sentence in the proposed motion down there about the board ultimately selecting and approving each final vendor, the policy that passed based upon the resolution that you had passed said that the board would approve anything over $50,000. We can leave it there where you will, for these purposes, and as we start the process, that you'll approve all of those, or we can just build in there that same $50,000 limit. I'll leave that to your discretion.
I've probably got my nose in this further than it should be, but you know, I sat on the MITA board for a long while,
yeah,
and ever since its inception, and that's the land use authority that we've had operating the state now for, I think we're all going on 11 years now.
And which is kind of a model for...
Yeah, and it is the model for the other land use authorities that we put together, but as I look at the way that MITA has worked, one of the things that's made it work very, very good is we've been able to be very lean and mean, and we've spent no time tripping over dollars to pick up pennies. Now, I know $50,000 sounds like a lot of money, and I know it's part of our procurement code, but there are some times, even with $50,000, you can trip over dollars to pick up pennies. And so I think it's important that we're able to move quickly and make decisions. And sometimes when we have to convene a board and bring everyone back together, that gets a little bit awkward to do that. I don't know what the right answer to that is. I know how we've done it with MITA, and we have an executive committee that we've put a little bit of authority into that they can make some of these quick decisions that they need to be made. Whether that's what we want to do here, this is a great committee, but you know, we've all got, as I look around this table, I can't think of anyone here that isn't busy. And so sometimes it's hard to convene a meeting and get those things put together as quickly as we need. So lean and mean and efficient, I guess, with the spending of our dollars. And I don't know how we do that, but I think we need to keep it in the back of our minds as we go through and make decisions.
Senator, are you proposing that we look at MITA's?
I'm just saying I know what's worked for the last 11 years with that particular committee, and we've had it's made up of a board similar to what we have here.
Yeah.
There's some legislators on the board, and it's made up of local elected officials, but we're able to move forward very quickly, and sometimes we have to do that because of, you know, military contracts and different things that come to us very quick, and you need to make a quick decision. Always comes back for board ratification, which we have done, but I think we just need to be careful we don't get ourselves onto a path here that things get away from us because of our inability to move as fast as we need to. Now, keep that in mind. I mean, there are many of you here that...
Well, so is it a larger dollar amount or just a smaller group approving it?
It's a smaller group approving it. Technically, so we can keep the ball rolling, if you will. We still have to come back to the board for ratification. You know, I would have to go back and look at that, but I know we've approved projects considerably larger than this as we've moved through. Now, we didn't have the luxury either of having, you know, the studies and all the things that we've had at this board as we put it together. And I mean, the buy-in on this is amazing. And we certainly don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, going to foul that up. But I think it's important that the more we get into this, if we start moving down the road of that property developing, there will be offers that will come to us very quickly, and there's going to have to be some decisions made. We don't need to make that today. I think if we adopt what we have here, we would be fine, but I think we might want to look at, as this starts to mature, it will be different than it is now. It isn't going to stay the same as it is.
Can I ask about Alan's recommendation? What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this, because I agree, we don't want to hold this up.
I think that there are different ways we can go about it. If right now we have monthly meetings set up, it's going to take a little while to get the procurement process started, get some things back. I think what you've outlined can work for now. Let's give it a shot. And then be willing to change if we need to. As we said, we're ultimately going to probably have to do something much more detailed than this, and we could make those changes at that point too.
Chris, did you have one?
Well, I was just going to say the default is if it's over 50,000, we'll come to the board. So if the proposal is just, you know, we only want to deal with the ones with a bigger dollar value, then we just deal with that final sentence. And
this board could change that at a future date.
Sure.
We can totally do that as Alan mentioned.
I think back on, just give you an example, the NSA building. When we went through that process, we had to have some legislative approval to make that work. And we literally moved through fast enough that we got approval of the Senate and the House. The bill went through, and it was almost set on the timeline that was there. The governor signed it, and they literally started digging the next morning. And we will find, I think we're going to find, and I've seen this up at Hill Air Force Base, I think we're going to find ourselves in those kind of situations. So if we just think about it, it might be that we don't have to discuss this again for a year, but we will probably have to discuss it when we start with projects on this property.
Well, I think good proposals. I love having some cover, but I think the suggestion that Chris made, if we don't have that last sentence in there of that proposed motion, then would fall back on the policy that you just approved, and so it would be the $50,000 limit, and if you think of all that, we just move ahead.
Okay.
I like that.
Do you want to make a motion?
I move that we adopt this as it's stated here, eliminating the last sentence that the board will ultimately select and approve each final vendor, which takes it back to the $50,000 threshold. Anything above $50,000 will come to the board. And then we'll revisit in the future.
Okay. Thank you. We have a motion by Mayor Ramsey. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank
second
you.
By Mayor Walker.
Thank you, Mayor. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Item number 8, schedule the Draper prison site visit.
So can go over this quickly. Sent out a doodle poll, as we discussed at our meeting 2 weeks ago, to see if there was a time that worked best for the majority of members. We've heard back from roughly half of the board members. The two dates that worked best, one was October 30th, where all but one of the respondents said that would work, and the other was November 12th, which is our next scheduled board meeting, so already on the calendar, and everyone that responded said that would work. So,
which one worked? The second one?
The second one, November
12th. The 12th.
Mm-hmm. Already scheduled, and if we wanted, we could set up a couple of hours of time there, do a quick site visit, have them take us around. I've already talked to corrections, and they said they can make that date work. And if we wanted to add an extra half an hour or something just to gather and take care of some needed business, we could do that. But
sounds good to me. I don't think anybody else has strong feelings.
Always good to be efficient. Just a question.
Yeah.
When does Thanksgiving fall?
It's late.
It's really late. It's the 28th.
Yeah, it's
so
late.
It's always the 4th Thursday.
So when's interim day this year? They've bumped it up in the past if we ran into Thanksgiving. But it isn't until the 28th.
It's on the 20th.
I thought I heard the 20th.
The 20th.
21st or 20th.
Thanksgiving is on the 20th?
No, interim is on the 20th. Wednesday, the 20th.
I'm fine. I'm okay with the 12th.
So November 12th will be the same.
Last time I was down there, they wanted to keep me.
Love you, give the tour. Okay, November 12th is...
From 2 to 4?
It
is.
So, I know a lot of those guys in the first 10 pages.
So you'll send out an updated notification about that?
Yeah.
I would love to confirm everything with the Department of Corrections and make sure that...
They don't let you know if you have a warrant till you try to get out.
All right. Item number 9, presentation of the overview planning process.
Hello.
Gentlemen.
Ryan Perry. I'm the Director of Regional Planning and Transportation for Salt Lake County. I'm going to introduce a few folks with me. Jake Young.
Hi.
Jake is the Manager of Regional Planning for Salt Lake County. And Wilf Summerhorn. All of you may know Wilf. Wilf actually retired from the Salt Lake County about a month ago. So I have big shoes in filling his spot in Salt Lake County. But our office is looking at planning and transportation at a regional level. And so although we have, Salt Lake County has authority related to municipal planning for the unincorporated area, that is not us. We look at things at a regional level. So we collect data, we do studies. Our transportation, we manage all the different four quarters of transportation funds. We see how they interact with municipalities and other counties. And we take data and try to help plan for the fast growing population that we have coming our way. So with that, Jake and Wilf have both spent over a year developing what we call the Ochre View Study. And that really focuses on the existing conditions that we have on the west bank of Salt Lake County and will certainly help us as planning goes forward. So I'll turn the time over to Jake.
Thank you, Ryan. Excited to be here. Never been in the governor's office before, so kind of fun for me. Thank you. So we call it Ochre View, Ochre Mountains, west bank of Salt Lake County, and then view tying in with Mountain View Corridor. So our vision is to have a thoughtful planning process. We've been meeting with the public, we've met with the cities on the West Bench, we've met with all the utility agencies. Really, we're out collaborating, looking at the West Bench, which is kind of the last frontier in terms of big planning. In terms of our study area, we took Bangor Highway on the east and then went west to the top of the Ochre Mountains, north to the Great Salt Lake, and then down to Utah County line. And so the prison site is, of course, really close to our study area. And this was an existing conditions report that we took over a year, like Ryan said, studying. So I'm just gonna give you a summary today of that. Currently, we're doing public involvement, meeting with the public. We've had an online survey. Also, we're out meeting with agencies, groups like this, so we really appreciate this opportunity. And then the next phase that we're getting into is our plan. So this is just the unincorporated for the West Bench, a master plan for the county. So we're scaling down in size. But the data gathering that we've been doing and the research is helpful to all. We've shared it with the cities in the Southwest, as Mayor Ranty knows. South Jordan and the Southwest visioning that's going on now. So one thing looking at the growth of the population on Western Salt Lake County, it's very significant. Since the year 2000, 135,000 new residents west of Bangor. That's 57% of Salt Lake County's growth and 15% of the state. Certainly that's been a hot spot of growth along with Utah County. So this is one of my favorite maps that we've developed, looking at housing development over time. So the light yellow, that's Salt Lake City, kind of historic, pre-1940. The lighter orange, that's also the Salt Lake era, the 40s, the 50s. And then you get into the orange to red, and that's where you see Holiday. Holiday was, you know, built out in 2 decades. It's amazing. Murray also almost 2 decades. East part of West Valley as well, Taylorsville. And then you get into the 80s and 90s, and that's where you see Sandy, West Jordan, East South Jordan, part of Riverton, really getting built out. And I think it's important to realize these big parts of Salt Lake Valley, they just get built out in about two decades. And then, and I do have the Draper site there in the circle, so you, or the prison site, so you see how that relates in. And so the question I think a lot of us may ask, what's going to happen next? And before I move on to that next map, if you look at the growth now that's happening, of course, you know, it's Harriman, South Jordan, or West South Jordan, West Jordan. It's really the same pressures that they're feeling there. That's what Holiday was feeling a few decades ago, and then, of course, Sandy in the 80s. So the areas in blue are developable. We're not saying they're necessarily going to be developed, but there is potential there. The dark area could happen sooner, and then the light blue would happen long-term after a mine closure. And then we, of course, added on the prison site there in the south. So you kind of see this pattern of development moving southwest over decades and then sweeping around and kind of heading north along the bench. And I think that's important as you build a center in the south part of the valley, understanding that there's going to be a big population on the west bench that's going to be coming there for jobs and shopping and all the activities that will be happening at that site.
Whoa. Doesn't come and then it goes all at once.
I know. So this ties in. We mapped the whole valley looking at what land could be developed. And the area in purple is developable land west of Bangor. Most of it is actually inside the city boundaries. West Jordan, South Jordan, Harriman. But there is some land that is in unincorporated county. And you see it there at 32,000 acres of developable land west of Bangor. The rest of the county is about 9,000, so approximately 3/4 of the developable land in Salt Lake County is west of Bangor. And then we do have the prison site there as redevelopable at 629 acres. And then the long term is what happens after the mine closes at 14,000 acres. So it is a small portion of the valley, but still pretty significant numbers there in terms of what could be developed in Salt Lake County. And the land to the north, up near the inland port area, that would be more industrial type uses. And then on the bench, very significant in terms of residential town centers, communities like that. Any questions on that map? So one thing that we found that was kind of an aha moment in terms of doing the study was the jobs when looking at the economy. So west of Bangor, there are about 33 jobs per 100 working adults, somebody 18 to 65. Salt Lake County as a whole leads with 84 jobs per 100 working adults. People are commuting in, Tooele, Utah County, Davis, you know, from all over. Well, for comparison purposes, Sandy has about 72 jobs per 100. And this is directly affecting our transportation networks by having the majority of the jobs on the east side of Salt Lake. And with the prison site being a job center, it's gonna shift it southward, or it could add more jobs there, but also will still keep the west having a low jobs to housing ratio. And this is very important when looking at jobs and housing and transportation at the same time. This little diagram shows what's happening on a daily basis. So west of Bangor, each day we have about 62,000 residents coming into work. We have about 26,000 staying to work in this area, and then 112,000 leaving to work. So a very a high majority are leaving. It's 81% of the residents west of Bangor are leaving to go to work each day. Very significant. So this map shows where the jobs are located. The dark line on the right side, that's the I-15 corridor. You'll see the prison site, of course, will be adding to that. And then you have 215, Redwood, and then Bangor. So the farther away we get from the I-15 corridor, the jobs decrease. And then on the west, the jobs that are there of scale is in Western Salt Lake City. And then some in West Jordan, some in South Jordan, and a little bit in the rest part of the valley. So in our planning for Southwest Salt Lake County, working with UDOT, they prepared this map. Where are people in the Southwest going to work? The majority going north, 48%, 28% east, which is where the prison site is, and then 18% staying in that area, and then a smaller number heading south to Utah County. And the farther south you go, Bluffdale, Riverton, the Utah County jobs go up. Okay, so I'm sharing a little transportation tidbit. This will make sense in a minute why we're showing this. So this was some research done by Wasatch Front Regional Council, looking at all the trips we take on a weekly basis. Well, about half of those are 3 miles or less. Each time we get in our car, about half the time, it's to the local area within the city. And that's kind of an important fact when we get into the next slide, which is looking at street connectivity, our transportation system, our network. So this map shows all of Western Salt Lake County in terms of intersections per square mile, which is a great way to measure connectivity at a regional scale. And you'll see Daybreak right there is definitely the highlight of Western Salt Lake, having more than 380 intersections per square mile. And part of that is a little bit of duplicity with the alleys and some of that. For comparison purposes, the avenues are about 180 intersections per square mile, and that's a great benchmark. That's very good connectivity. And I noticed today, even driving from the county buildings here, you know, there were a lot of different options I could have taken. But when we get out of street connectivity and areas that don't have that, you only take the same road and then you get the traffic. So the more connectivity we can have in the cities, the better it is. And I'm going to show you the whole county here. And this is where we tie in to the prison site. You see the blue circle down there. It really is a dead spot of connectivity. And that makes sense for the land use that's happened for the last 50 years. But going forward in your planning, I would suggest you keep that in mind in terms of really building that connectivity network in the cities that are surrounding and tying that in. And so you'll see the Salt Lake, almost the whole eastern part of the city has high connectivity. Kearns, Historic Sandy, Daybreak, those are areas of good hotspots for connectivity. So I think that's something to keep in mind as you plan the prison site and connect to the surrounding area.
Question.
Yes, go ahead.
What point, I mean, there's certainly lack of connectivity at this prison site. So what point is the natural barriers, that are, and there's a lot of them down there, how do they fit in with this?
So that some of the natural barriers like the highways, canals,
rivers,
yeah, and obviously they are obstacles to overcome, along with the historic patterns of not going through. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer.
It's not a hard question. It's an expensive question to answer.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So on there, and we do have a copy of this presentation for you. You'll be able to see how the different cities come out in terms of connectivity. So I think that's something to keep in mind, as difficult and as expensive as it is, knowing that when someone that's living there needs to go get a gallon of milk, if they don't have to get on a major road, then there's a huge benefit of that. One slide looking at housing and income at the same time. The areas in red are Western Salt Lake County, and then the area in black, or the numbers in black, are all of Salt Lake County as a whole. So since the year 2000, single family has gone up 52% in the county, 38% west of Bangor. Rent has gone up 87% west of Bangor, 68% in the entire county. And then household income has only gone up 39% and 37%. So you see that big gap between rent and income, and then real estate and income as well. And that's something that a challenge that all the cities are facing right now in dealing with housing and working on their SB 34 plan. So looking at types of units built, this slide shows in the year 2000 on the left, we were 69% detached single family, about 7% condominiums, townhomes, and then 21% of apartments. Well, fast forward to where we are now, 37% single family, 27% townhome and condominiums, and then 31% apartments. I don't know if people realize we've had a monumental shift of housing types of what we're building in Salt Lake County. It's very different in terms of new construction. Now, when you look at the individual cities, they don't match this exact formula. Some have more apartments, some have more townhomes. But in general, when you put the soup together, it's very different than it was in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. So I won't spend a lot of time on water, but we did research it, and our conclusion was it's available. It's just going to be very expensive going forward with all of the infrastructure and the energy cost of pumping it up the bench. This is a slide from Jordan Valley Water that as density goes up, water usage per capita goes down, but increases per acre. And that's where you see the red gallons per acre going up and then the gallons per capita coming down. It's just, I think, a good thing to understand about water. One thing on parks, because those are very important to quality of life. In Western Salt Lake County, we're about 5.9, about 6 acres of park per 1,000 residents. The national average is about 10 acres per 1,000 residents. So we are falling short in terms of parks. I would hope as you plan the site that you keep in mind the need for parks and plazas and trails and open space. And this is a map showing park location and walkability to the park and the concentration. Okay. We're almost done here. This is just kind of a summary of what Rio Tinto has shared with us in terms of the future. The areas in green are future conservation in terms of not being developed. Areas in red are post-mine closure. Yellow is at mine closure. And then blue is the near term, meaning there's discussion going on now, planning. Their area in the southwest near the Olympia Hills site, and then the area in the north for in the inland port area for jobs, energy, and conservation. So this is kind of a summary of what Rio Tinto has shared with us. So looking at the West Bench and how it relates to the rest of Salt Lake Valley, there will be master plan communities. We already have Daybreak, which is a great example. There are other large properties that are being looked at for master plan communities. We hope to see a West Bonneville Shoreline Trail, future access to recreation, and then additional housing for Salt Lake Valley. So this is our project website, oakerview.org. All these maps are online, and we also have a 175-page report, which I didn't want to bring or bore you with today, but we do have a brochure summary of this. Any questions?
Can I ask one? I just can't remember if your parks information, did that include Bingham Creek? Your current 5.96 acres of park per 1,000 people, did that include Bingham Creek?
It included what was built, but not all the way. And so that will bump it up.
Okay, I just could not remember if that was included in the number.
Because Bingham Creek is like starting construction.
60 acres total, but it's going to take 30 years to build out. So the first 50 acres is going to come on board.
Yeah,
which I
actually
know
going to
change the number slightly. I just didn't remember if that was included in the total or not.
I think it's the big square one there.
That's what made me ask.
Yeah, it's that big red hot spot there in the middle. Because you share it with West Jordan.
No, it's 100% South
100%,
Jordan.
But it's close
to
that
one, which is why I asked.
Yeah.
Is that included in
it? It is, yep, it is included.
Okay.
Other questions?
How much ground was, or is Daybreak? How much was the acres there?
4,000 acres.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They're currently about halfway built out.
Which they've only developed about half or so.
They've developed half of the land, but they've only developed one third of their entitlement. So two thirds of the entitlement that they still have will go on the other half of what's there. It's going to be tight. It's going to be a lot of people there.
Which will be about 14,000 units.
More. Yes, 14,000 more.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I need to chime in real quick. The one takeaway when we were working on this and when I was still there, and Alan came out to visit with us shortly before I departed, but looking at what potentially could happen at the prison site and how that relates to what's happening, particularly in Southwest Salt Lake County, probably the majority of the new residents are going to be locating in the western part of the county. If there's a strong new job center at the prison site, that's probably going to mean there's going to be a lot of transportation demand east-west. East-west transportation is already about maxed out in that part of the county. And when you talk to Carlos Braceras at UDOT, he said we really don't have a lot of options to improve east-west transportation in Southwest Salt Lake County because the rights of way are pretty constrained and the land's all being developed. And so there's not a lot of options. And so if there's going to be strong growth here and strong residential growth over here, we've got to think about how to connect those people to those jobs in some way, maybe differently than what we've been doing in the past.
Thank you.
Smart to say.
Congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
This is it, and this is part of kind of what keeps us up at night as we think through these. And I like what you said at the end, maybe looking at doing it differently than we've done it before, because I think that's going to be key. A little bit of conversation last time about the car being king and how that could be a mistake in this with this potential development. So we really do have an opportunity to do something that's never been done in the state in ways that could improve the landscape for future generations. So we want to work very closely together with UTA, with our regional planning partners, and with UDOT being closely involved in all of these decisions. So thank you. You're very helpful. Fascinating.
Thank you.
Crazy to see it all there and how quickly it's changed in the last 20 years. So thank you, gentlemen. Okay. Any questions for Jake and Ryan and team? Okay. Thank you. Item number 10, goals, success measures, and next steps. Alan, you want to lead us through that? And I apologize, I have to be to another meeting at 4:30 downtown, so I'll be here for just a minute longer to sneak out. Alan will conduct the final piece of the meeting.
As that's going around, let me just mention a couple of things that have come up in the last 24 hours or so. One, we've had our first request for an easement on the site in Bluffdale for stormwater drain. And so we're going to have to look at that in some detail. We'll bring that back to you shortly and get your decision on whether makes sense to grant that. It's right along the border, the western border of the property, but facilitates some work they're doing. And we've got to admit that. At our last meeting, we had this item on the agenda. Wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of weigh in, big picture, strategic thinking, and all of that. Didn't have a lot of time, but one of the things that we mentioned was the legislature's already given us direction on the things that we ought to be considering as part of this site. I think it's important always to begin with the end in mind. It's important for us to be thinking about what it is we want to accomplish and not just stumble forward and see what opportunities present themselves. So, as a starting point, wanted to share with you the element of the statute that talks about the duties and responsibilities. It's interesting, as you look through this, the legislature didn't say that we were to maximize return or tax dollars on this site. I think we all recognize that's important, and it's going to be necessary to pay for some of the infrastructure and create broader benefits. But a couple of things that we need to do. It says the authority shall pursue development strategies and objectives designed to, 1A, discussion of creating high quality jobs, highly trained workforce. And B, strategic residential and commercial growth. I think that's going a bit to what Wilf just mentioned. We're going to be thinking about how residences, commercial jobs fit together to minimize the need for travel, and it goes into that a little bit more later. C, a high quality of life for residents within the site and those surrounding the site. And then defines a little bit what that quality of life means. C1, jobs close to where people live, vibrant urban centers, housing types that match workforce needs. Again, trying to see if we can look at the jobs that'll be created here and provide some housing that will accommodate the range of jobs that are there so that people don't have the same need to travel. Again, more of a quality of life, parks, connected trails, open space, preservation of natural lands, and preserving and enhancing recreational opportunities. D, complement the development of land in the vicinity. I think we've got a directive there to be talking to our neighbors, be good neighbors, make sure that we're working in a way that we create a regional development idea, not just something that looks good within the boundaries of the prison site, but doesn't work with the surrounding areas. Improve air quality, minimize resource use. Then a lot of discussion about transportation, acquiring rights of way and property to ensure transit access to the site, and then a world-class mass transit infrastructure on the site. I've been having some conversations with our transportation agencies about what that means and what it'll look like. And the alternatives analysis for transit is underway, and we'll be looking at those questions. Then as you look further down, things to consider in number two there, paragraph 2B and C, nationally recognized research center, labor training centers, higher education presence. So the legislature's kind of given us a vision of what they'd like to see at that site. I think we then have to take those broad concepts and decide what it looks like on the ground, how they fit together. So
if we do all those things, we will maximize the return to the state. We'll maximize the value there. So I think that's built into the definition of what we'd like to see.
It's a great point. I absolutely agree.
And I think to be able to do those things requires staying involved for quite a while. You know, just so that it's not just completely sold off or handed over to someone else, and then we hope that it has some of these things in it. So I think that's really nice that some of those ideas of a research center or higher education. Interesting one too is that there's actually a directive to improve air quality. Like, wow, that's a big one to think about. Yeah. It's easier to think about all the other stuff. How do we actually measure that?
Right. That's a good point.
And I think we've seen some of how we could measure that. It's getting cars off the road. Half of our air quality problems right now are tailpipes. So I think that's one area. If we can stop people from commuting from that west side to downtown Salt Lake City, get them so they're not commuting at all and they're coming to jobs there, that's one way that we can measure cleaning up the air.
Yeah, I mean, we might have self-driving electric cars that are taking people, you know, and car sharing and all kinds of stuff.
Other thoughts on how we take these broad goals and start to think about them in terms of planning on a site basis?
I have a question. That Alpha survey, I was reading through it, and there are a lot of easements already granted and you know, you had just mentioned that someone that Bluffdale recently asked for one. So there's a lot of right-of-ways and easements. A lot of them are old, too, like with Power and Gap, like with companies. So seeing how they've passed along is, did the company that did the Alta survey, did they go out and do some physical marking, like stakes or the metal, like the pins, or is everything just on paper? And or as we go along, do we have any access to talk to them about it as we look at new things or making sure that transportation isn't going over a gas line or things like that?
I could defer to Jen.
They did place monuments on the site. Yeah, they did place monuments, but I mean, their work's complete, but we can contract with them for more. We're really meant to talk to you about whatever.
But you're right, it's really helpful to know what's there and what other property interests
are. Yeah, there's a lot of them recorded there already over the years.
Those existing easements is honestly, and maybe I should admit this, not something that I've thought about much up to this point. And you're right, as we're trying to put this together specifically, well, as you said, you know, we don't want a road going over the top of a gas line or whatever. That is going to happen. That kind of thing is going to happen, and they're going to have to be moved. Those are all contingencies.
Right, and some of them may be abandoned easements.
Right.
Also, there's obviously, you know, prescriptive easement where somebody's just used something for a certain amount of years and it's not recorded, but legally it's an easement. So it'd be nice to maybe potentially have a meeting regarding that. And I think that second email you sent us, all where you can pull up a lot of the fact, like you can see where there's the layers and stuff. Not all of it, but it'd be nice to just be able to see it, to be able to communicate about it. So maybe we can have the meeting, like, the time after we do the site visit to kind of talk about that. So.
That's a good idea. And yeah, thanks to Jim and his team for giving us those overlays and the maps.
Yeah, we actually sent those out to everybody before, but but we could do some work on the Alta survey, investigate the validity of some of the easements to see where we're exactly at, as far as that goes. As far as the easement that's being requested, though, that we certainly would want the input from this board, but that would be us that would have to grant that easement, as we're the property owners. So.
And that's what I thought. The email I got said it's all in your hands now. And so I think, but my understanding was that it's the property owner, DFCM, would ultimately sign that document.
Well, we're not going to sign any easement that the board here doesn't approve at this point, though, right? Because there's a lot of things going forward, but we would have to grant that.
Because that wasn't on the agenda, we can't talk about it today in detail. So we'll notice that and get you the information and try to move that along. Other thoughts on things that we ought to be doing, things we ought to be considering?
Yeah, I wanted to raise Alan. I've been talking to Alan about the concept of a smart city. I served on a 2-year national legislative task force looking at this concept of smart cities. And we ended up last spring in Columbus, Ohio, who had competed for and received a $40 million U.S. transportation grant. And they have been, you know, planning and implementing this concept of a smart city. I mean, you know, driverless vehicles and just really, really some great things. He's got a lot of information from me, but I think that ought to be, if you get to the point here, we just looked at a budget here, so a little travel that you go out there and somebody else go with you maybe and take a look at the concept of a smart city. I mean, it would be really, I mean, get out there so far, environmentally, transportation-wise, just really some marvelous concepts.
Safety issues.
Safety.
Emissions.
Yes, safety, emissions, just really marvelous things.
That's cool.
Yeah, really, we'll really
neat. Put on Iron Man suits and just fly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. We're spent. We've been through it all. Our time's about up. But again, we want to make sure that there's time in these meetings for more than just conducting the business, but also for thinking big thoughts and bringing the ideas of this group, things that you hear, ideas and thoughts you have to the table so that we're communicating well. If there's nothing else, we've got a final motion, I guess, before us.
Move for adjournment.
Sorry, all the official quorum to the actual adjournment.
We're just
going to need to. All right, I'll have a motion to adjourn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Return. Thank you all so much for participating.
Thanks, guys.
I'm looking back. I got home.